Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to Straight to the Point, completely off topic. We're here with Villain Arts entrepreneur and, I don't know, mythical man behind the scenes, the brain of Villain Arts, the largest tattoo convention festival, the largest tattoo festival circuit, and also the owner of Philadelphia Tattoo Festival, which is the largest tattoo festival in the world, correct?
Correct.
How are you doing today?
Good.
I'm arguing with Candy whether or not you're in Puerto Rico or not.
Puerto Rico.
Yeah, you're doing your sentence.
Getting my beach on. Yeah.
Doing your prison sentence in paradise.
Pardon. Yep. It's brutal.
Look forward to coming out. But I want to get into, if you don't mind, I'd like to start with singing a few of your praises, because they are far reaching, really, in the fact that you are the owner of Villain Arts, which is the largest tattoo convention or tattoo festivals that go together. No one in the world, correct me when I'm wrong, please, but no one in the world puts on as many tattoo shows as you or Villain Arts does.
Even in Europe, I don't think there's anyone that, you know, even does more than five of them. I think.
And how many does Villain Arts do?
That 24 mm-hmm. this year on the schedule. Although we're looking at, I might add Portland, Maine to the schedule for later this year. I was looking for something in a Portland that doesn't have heroin needles all over the sidewalk.
Oh, I was thinking Maine had a place called Portland, but this is then in
Portland, Maine,
which is in Oregon. Okay. Right on.
Yeah. As opposed to Portland, Oregon,
which you've done Portland, Oregon though.
But really that city was just a mess when we went there, in 2021. And, I just don't think that city's really ready to have visitors yet. It was like, yeah, like,
give me a second to clean up. Is that, yeah. You're just standing patiently by the front door.
Yeah.
I really just wanted to show her my vacuum cleaner.
You missed about 150 heroin needles on that sidewalk. You might want to brush up on that part. Sad. COVID did a lot of damage to a lot of different places. And, some of the damages, states that had no restrictions. Some of the damage was states that had way too many restrictions. Some of the damage was just people that lost their goddamn mind. and I think
one way or both
into that, mm-hmm. that last category. It just, not ready.
They
not
seem ready to have a lot
kind of
people
rejoin the world yet.
On both ends of the spectrum, in my rudimentary, like they just seem, there's no one that seems to be in the middle of the teeter totter. It seems like wherever the teeter totter is about one thing or other, you're just far left or far right on it.
I'm on the middle of that teeter totter. COVID really taught you that the far left is just as bad as the far right in just being irrationally crazy to me and watching,
you
kind of identified one way. And, after COVID and seeing like people just like really, really, whatever the, whatever the mile marker for what I considered sane was driven another 100 miles in either direction of that thing for me.
You saw it then on a personal level though, too, not on a societal level so much. You mean when you're going to put on these events, you have to work pretty closely with the city or with officials that represent the city, and they started asking for crazy things to be done or expecting crazy things.
You know, It's really interesting traveling. You know, first of all, I set this up and I started doing conventions because I just really love to travel and see the world, see the states, see the different cities, meet different tattooers. And, you know, I just created this whole little environment that people were able to, you know, get together and learn from each other. And, you know, I became the pollen in a big bee nest of tattooing. And I love being the pollen.
Yes.
And in traveling, that's a good analogy. You know, like through the COVID, it was, you know, and, you know, now that we're finally over COVID, at least yeah, this week,
it feels like we are, right? I haven't looked at the news, admittedly.
I landed in Puerto Rico yesterday and I was shocked. I didn't have to fill out a travel safe SARA alert plan. I didn't have to show my vax card to get out of the baggage claim. You know, so even Puerto Rico, which was a heavily restricted and understandably so, like, you know, I'm not against restrictions per se. You know, if you live on an island that people are trapped and the hospital system is a little stressed pre-COVID, you know, maybe you want to protect people. You want to be safe, you know, and I get that. Mm-hmm. But wearing masks outside, you started getting crazy here. I think
you didn't have
really
to do it coming back. It seems like it's gone then.
They almost got rid of masks on planes. This week they're fighting that thing. A lot of people have a lot of things to say about that. I don't know.
Honestly, traveling may not be mandatory to wear a mask on a plane, but honestly, it's probably best. Like we used to get on planes and what was it? Larry Brogan taught me. He said, you turn the airstream and you point it directly in front of your nose, even though it's cold, it will keep the air moving there so that you don't catch whatever somebody has a flu and then not tattoo healthily that weekend.
Yeah. I actually, I got COVID recently and, I left and I kind of felt a little sick coming, you know, traveling. And then I got, you know, to my layover in Atlanta and I was like, yeah, I definitely feel sick. And then on that last leg of the plane, it like, I just started like hot flashing. I started like, I'm like, fucking, I'm sick. Like I got, right. You know, I definitely have COVID, you know? And, you know, what do? You're stuck on a plane, you know, like, you know, it's a two leg flight from, you know, halfway across the country. Like, you know, what do I do? The Atlanta airport and get a hotel room for 14 days. Like, you know, like, you know what I mean?
Did they let you into your destination then? I mean, cause a lot of times they
let me into Puerto Rico because oddly I had a negative COVID test from the day before.
Okay. So the day that's before, what I was negative. Right on. Thank God.
Yeah.
Legally, would they have had the right to send you back to another place like that? Then they put you on a plane. Though.
I don't know because I have a Puerto Rican driver's license now. I'd be like, I don't know, man. I live here. Like, where are you sending me? Like,
yeah.
What's going on here? You know, but
interesting. They did, precarious.
But because Puerto Rico was so strict with the restrictions, and this was only a month and a half ago, like I got COVID in January. And I'm vaccine boosted. So I was only sick for 2 days. It wasn't terrible, but, the Puerto Rican SARA alert, they send you emails every day or text messages every day that you have to, fill out this I'm not sick report. So I just checked all the boxes and then emailed them and said, hey, I tested positive for COVID. And they called me, got my flight number and they contact traced, the six people sitting around me.
Okay.
Which I thought was pretty cool. You know, pretty, you know,
unless you're worried about them tracking you with, you know, with Bill Gates's vaccine, chip, then yeah. Cause that's an actual sign of them tracking you.
If you have a cell phone, they have so much data on you. I mean, when you speak into a cell phone, they market you for digital ads. off keywords that you say. You know, the whatever privacy acts are involved in having a cell phone are negligible at that. It's they don't really need a microchip to track you. You carry a phone. You already did their job for you. You know, it's not a conspiracy. It's not a, you know, I remember sitting outside of my Florida house and I was like, you know, I want to get a sunshade over the pool. And then I said the word sunshade, like, I don't know, 12 fucking times with my brother-in-law, you know, deciding how big of a sunshade we're going to get. What do you like this color? Do you like this?
And it comes up in your feed right away then.
Mm-hmm. We crack a beer. We check our Facebook. Just goddamn sunshade ads.
Kids as well?
Yep. Both of us. Because we're sitting there both with our phones in our pockets, not looking at sunshades, not anything. Just we said the word sunshade like 15 times. So now when we get done with this, you're going to get ad served sunshades, player. You're going to have ads. For days for sunshades.
Now you just keep on, you're trying to make it worse. I don't know. I've been trying this purposefully. I use my old phone for this, so it's not tuned in. So hopefully they're not tracking this one. I just got a new iPhone. That one definitely. But no, I've been practicing with my iPhone saying, what was it? Rubber booties. I'm just trying to see if, because I have no reason that I would ever need rubber booties. But so I've been saying it around it to kind of, you know, test that theory, and I'm hoping to see what comes up next. But can I get into the makeup of Troy actually as we get far behind? Because my understanding of you, and I'd like the world to know you as well, because you are the behind the scenes, the maestro, if you will, the who is that? The wizard? Wasn't the wizard. Who was the guy behind the curtain of sorts? But
behind the curtain of Oz.
Yes. Yes. Toto pulled back. So let me be the Toto to your curtain. you were born in Milwaukee. Am I wrong?
Yep. Born in Milwaukee. Went to art school in Milwaukee while I served a tattoo apprenticeship for about a year and a half. And then moved to Philly and started just tattooing full time with Eddie.
You got brothers and sisters? Eddie.
Got a sister in Orlando. She's actually a famous nutritionist and does keynote speaking all over the place as the diet diva.
My
sister's rad.
That's her. Is that her Instagram too?
Probably.
Shameless plug. Right on. I'm going to try. I'm trying to find potential sponsors, so I'm always looking. Carvana gets it for my last episode with Jesse Smith. But yeah, then, and how does it strike your parents? They put you to art school. Did they imagine, or I'm guessing they put you through art school. And how did they feel when you started taking up tattooing?
Anyway. I mean, they were kind of apprehensive at first, and then they saw that there was money in it, and they're just kind of like glad I wasn't selling drugs or fucking up still. So, it gave me something to focus all of that, energy on. So they're kind of happy with that, you know, that I had a direction, you know, that I was going,
that wasn't was drugs direction. Or trouble. Were you were selling drugs at some time in your life?
Well, it was part of my apprenticeship.
okay, right on. It was having to pick up for your mentor.
My first apprenticeship was working for a super scumbag biker guy that was just like out of his fucking mind. And you know, I was happy to get out of that after about a year and a half. Like, met Eddie, Elvis Bill actually met Eddie and got hired away.
Eddie,
and
I was working, of course.
Yeah, Philadelphia Eddie at a trade show. And then when Eddie needed another artist, Bill got me out of the situation I was in and over to working for Eddie, which was just a dream job for a 20-year-old, you know.
So this Bill, you kind of gave your life that direction, really, or he made the connections, right? Because without all that, where would you be now? Do you ever pause and think about that? Without Eddie, where would I be? Without Bill introducing me to Eddie, or without tattooing,
I just I might have taken a different direction, a different place, a different thing. But you know, at the time I was already plotting to go south somewhere, you know, like Florida, New Orleans, somewhere. Like I just, you know, I wanted to get out of the Wisconsin snow for sure. And, yeah, for some reason I thought Philadelphia was warmer.
And what'd you find out?
It wasn't as horrible as the snow in Milwaukee, but
right, the snow is not as bad. Not, it's the people that give you the real warmth in Philadelphia. The people,
yeah,
the community,
yeah.
Of course, we just if you haven't traveled, Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love, and that's important to note. As you'll find, sometime it seems as though it might be in the lack or not heavy supply. You also went to jail at one point. Was this before or after your apprenticeship?
No, before. I was like the high school acid dealer. And, you know, so kind of got in trouble, kind of had to finish high school at a different school after I got expelled. You know, did a little jail time, came out of it, you know, with,
That wasn't for you
to go to art school and I really want a tattoo, you know, cause, you know, like, and it wasn't even like the jail experience making me want a tattoo. Like all of my punk rock friends and skateboard friends were all like turning 18, getting tattooed. And I was like, man, this is sweet. I totally want to, you know, and I could always draw. I was always good at art. So it just clicked perfect for me. You know,
you were a punk rock kid of sorts then? Skateboarder?
Yeah, skateboarder, punk rock kid, you know.
Milwaukee, I imagine, has a pretty hardcore scene, or at least did when you were young.
Milwaukee had a great music scene when we were kids, you know, like the East Side, the, you know, a lot of little shows. I got to see Gigi Allen's show where he got arrested.
Oh, that one?
So there was, yeah, the one where he...
oh, where before he... Yeah.
Yeah, and like, before... in like 88 or something, you know.
It saved his life, really, because he was supposed to kill himself like the next month later, as he promised he would on Halloween every year, pretty much.
Halloween,
and always found himself
locked up. Didn't quite
make
Halloween.
Right, which, thank God, you know, because then he had so many more years of being a prolific artist. tongue in cheek. Let's talk about Philadelphia, Eddie, though, for people that don't know. I've talked about him before. I don't know him. Like, he's a big remorse spot in my life, kind of, because anytime I would be at the Philadelphia show or have the opportunity there, I'm blown away at the opportunity to tattoo, you know. But if Philadelphia Eddie was there, I feel like now in hindsight, I feel like I squandered all this time, you know, because I was worried about working. I was worried about doing tattoos and impressing people and not realizing that this historical icon was around that could have enriched my life just with a few stories or what,
you know. However, Eddie was, Eddie was beautiful. He was such a powerful character. He, you know, he was just so much fun. He would just light up a room. He'd just come in, everybody would be smiling. You know, he just, he could just turn a room on like a switch, you know, amazingly charismatic guy. And, you know, had a ton of really, really good, crazy stories, you know, and he was a crazy guy.
And a voice, you know, like Sinatra.
Like seven volumes of books, you know, he did like seven biographies and they're really good.
Because you can,
they're on Amazon.
You can
get them, download them. I sell them at the shows, but, you know, or you can download them on Amazon. Eric, his ghostwriter, still runs the Amazon. So he's getting paid. It's not like somebody stole it, you know.
Okay,
Eric,
right.
Did all the work for putting it together. So,
and they're awesome. So, I want to take a moment to say, like, they are awesome. If you are listening to this, you're not going to be mad to buy them. If podcasts are available, because they were pretty much just made from his audio tape recordings, right? Are there podcasts of that same audio?
I actually started that project with him. We used to go visit him once a month on Thursdays, and I'd bring different people up to his house and we'd have drinks at his house and, you know, and he'd just tell all these crazy stories. And I was like, hey, Eddie, you should really make a book of these stories. Do you mind if I record them? I'll help you put it together, you know? So I recorded all these things and started writing it. And, And then, you know, he got divorced and then he moved to Florida and then he, you know, and then he was like, yeah, I really want to start that project again now that I have time. And I'm like, cool. You know, do you want all my tapes? And he's like, no, I'm going to start over and try to do it, you know, like, you know, more of a starting point and an ending point. And then, okay. And
so there's two
really
volumes
at all.
Of
these. They're just completely random.
Okay.
he'll start a story in Philadelphia and it'll end in Hawaii, you know,
well,
like 10 years later, you know,
in reading
story.
It, there's moments where he says, oh, I got to go back. I just realized I didn't tell you about, and then he'll have to tell a whole backstory for an artist of his and his rocky relationship with his girlfriend or something and how that affected their travels.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in one of the audio tapes, he actually answers the UPS door and then starts telling a story about whoever just sent him like a painting or something, you know, like in the middle of the story, he's like, that doorbell just rang, you know,
but it's so nice because I honestly, and if anybody likes my podcast, there's a few people that do, I don't know why, but it's, most of them say it's, they like that it's raw, kind of uncut, you know, and it doesn't have all the shine on it. And if, I mean, that is 100% what you get from the audio from his books.
Yeah. Yeah. It's raw. It's you and him, sitting on a bar stool, hearing a story from 1950 that blows your mind.
By one of the greatest, you know, storytellers.
And you just have this experience, and it's super cool. Moving to Philadelphia at the age of 20 was quite the experience for me. You know, Eddie took an instant shine to me. You know, I was just, cause I was in that first generation of like art school kids that were tattooing. So I was like a real artist. And,
yeah. You know, like, a lot of it like, was, you know, Sailor Jerry's Ed Hardy. Sorry to make the reference, but there was a similar.
But it was right at that time in, you know, 92, 93, where the, you know, the tattoo magazines all of a sudden got popular. Like one of the motorcycle magazines started a tattoo version. And then there was, you know, quickly became like six or seven different rivaling tattoo magazines and,
Tattoo Review.
You know, and it created this whole visual tapestry that wasn't, that people didn't know was going on. You know, they're like, oh my God, I didn't know you could get photorealistic portraits like this, you know,
right.
That you could get, you know, all these really, you know, high end tattoos, like,
which,
you know,
when you met Eddie, that's the stuff that you were doing, right?
Realism. Like, I knew how to, you know, I could draw a portrait and it looked like, you know, whoever I was drawing, I could draw, you know, like whatever. So, you know, like being in that first kind of generation of art school kids turned tattooer, you know, it was really fun. And I just started traveling at an early age with Eddie, you know, like, I guess that German, Wisconsin, you know, background for me, let me keep up with him drinking, which is great. So, you know, it was just a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of, you know, the people that were like in the magazines and that were the, you know, the big names and pushing the envelope, you know? And it was, back then it was, you know, it was definitely pushing an envelope. And a lot of that, you know, happened with the, conventions, the, you know, these people would meet up at the conventions and they'd see the work that each other's doing and they'd say, wow, how did you get that texture? How did you, oh yeah, you just use a, you know, you just use a 9mag and you slow it down and you back, shade this, you do this. Mm-hmm. I put a little bit of white in this black and gray to separate a tone from the other. Like, you know, like I did this sleeve once and showed Paul Booth and I was like, yeah, I used a warm and a cold black and gray so that all the background stuff, drops away from the foreground stuff that I mixed reddish brown in. And he was like, oh okay. My God, that is like the coolest thing ever, you know? And then Paul started doing that for a minute, you know, to get, you know, just subtle text
differences,
pushing the envelope,
okay.
But you know, pollinating the industry, you know, with, you know, with at first the magazines and the conventions and, you know, I mean, now the internet is, you know, is all over the place, but, you know,
it's kind of doing your job of past.
It is. And it's not, because you'll never replace human interaction. You know, like watching, you know, I was like, what kind of jackass is going to pay $400 to watch Kiss on TV? Live, you know, like,
well, yeah,
COVID, you know,
I see that problem with the WWE. Unfortunately, they've gone to an all TV screen audience, and it really takes a lot of the luster away.
You know, there's something to be said about live entertainment. There's something to be said about, you know, having real human interactions with other people. And that's how you learn. You learn because you learn, not because you're taught. It's just, you know, it's traveling with Eddie. It just set this love for me in doing it. And, you know, but I also was kind of ADD and did a lot of other little side projects besides tattooing. I started a little clothing label called Tattooed Kingpin in 97. You know, I was making photo image body jewelry while I was tattooing, you know, tattoo clothing, all this different stuff. And then, you know, when Eddie started the Philly show in 98, you know, I'm still tattooing, like, and I'm not just tattooing. I mean, I'm tattooing Philadelphia South Street Shop, which was just a crazy zoo of, you know, just, it was just nuts. I mean, you know, riots on weekends, 30,000 people on the streets, you know, it was just madness, you know, bars, drunk people, just craziness. And
has it changed?
You know, I'm clocking in. I mean, it's gotten a little more calm. It's not as crazy as it used to be. And it's still a cool place, you know, South Street's, you know,
it's still cool. Not as crazy
and whatever, but not,
we get an idea what you like.
Yeah. we haven't had, the cops haven't ran into our shop to hide from the mob because they were underwhelmed for a while.
Oh, you know? Wow. But that's happened. Got,
like, that crazy, you know?
Brotherly love.
I mean, trash cans through windows and, you know, like, real crazy.
Well, but if your football team would just win a bit more.
No, that's even they destroy more things when they do win.
Okay. Right on.
Yeah, when they won the World Series, they had to spray down the light poles with grease so that people didn't climb up them and fall into the crowd and hurt themselves.
Yes, I know, actually, when they had the Super Bowl there a couple of years back too, we were coming into Philly because you had the convention right after that, right? And we were coming into Philly figuring like 50-50 on whether or not the town is, you know, whether it's destroyed and windows are broken or cars are still on fire.
Yeah. Well, luckily by the time of my show, they, you know, they put most of the cars that were burning out. but yeah, it was Philly still like super trashed, you know, like the city was just still like, I mean, beer cans everywhere, still like cleaning up, you know?
So that energy, though, from that city has got to come into your tattooing style and attitude for sure.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's, you know, it's an aggressive city, but it's also a vibrant one. And it's a cool city. I love Philly. I'll always love Philly. Philly's definitely not for everybody. And it's definitely, a really vibrant melting pot of a lot. And it, you know, super cool. I, you know, got to see so much good music play through Philly. You know, so many good things.
Can I talk about how Philly is one of the more tattoo friendly places in the world? And one of the reasonings that we've talked about before is the large amount of advertising dollars that have been spent in Philadelphia for tattoos for the Philadelphia Tattoo Convention.
You know, when I took over, I helped Eddie, you know, with the early Philly show, 98, 99. And then, I took it over in 2003 and, it was a mess when I took it over. Like I couldn't even, like Eddie's like, yeah, good luck with that. I ripped the cops off for 12 grand. I told them to go fuck themselves. none of the hotels will rent to you, you know, like, I mean, he used to have like 1% bikers doing security and shooting off guns in the parking lot and fights and craziness. Somebody threw a soda machine over the balcony on the 12th floor and it exploded in the lobby. You know, like it was,
oh my God,
it was wild. It was, you know, coming back from that and trying to, trying to do something, you know, like that's art, that's legitimate. That's, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I moved it to Center City and I just built it. And every year I just built it and built it. And, you know, I decided that I wanted to open it to the public. And, at that point, tattoo conventions, you know, in 98, 99, you know, till I came in at 2003, to run, you know, my first Philly show. It wasn't the first Philly show. It was like the fifth or whatever. But, yeah, I think it was the fifth at that point, but they were small, you know, 60 booths, 70 booths, shows at airport hotels. You know, there's a little bit of advertising, but it was mostly, you know, like tattooers,
which would be people a that small were friends show.
With tattooers. Yeah. Small, yeah. Like real small, like
Philadelphia. I mean, now like, is like that whole 800.
Yeah. I mean that entire show would fit in my food court at the Philly show, okay. You know?
Right.
So, you know, I just started really trying to hit the general, you know, the general public with it. And, you know, spending all that advertising, you know, I grew tattooing, especially in Philadelphia, you know, so much. I mean, there's the volume of advertising that I do, the impressions that are created, the social media that's shared, just at the scale of what that thing is and for how long I've done it. You know, I would say, you know, before I started running that, you know, people were still a little bit more heavily tattooed than a lot of places. Like it was, you know, it was a blue collar, you know, upper middle class blue collar city. And, right. You know, it's okay to have tattoos, but you know, like you went to a fine dining restaurant, you know, that waitress couldn't have a forearm tattoo. Now you go to any restaurant in Philadelphia and they have a forearm tattoo. And it's, you know, I if definitely played a big part in advertising and, you know, people coming to my, you know, coming to the show, promoting what good tattooing was and having people see the difference between, you know, a Bob Tyrell portrait and a Tasmanian devil for $140 off a wall when you're drunk on South Street, you know, it's, yes. You know, I really helped grow tattooing in Philadelphia and make it more socially acceptable for, you know, for people to have visible tattoos.
Do you feel that,
you know,
happens?
And you can see that city, like, you know, with that now.
Yeah. You see, just like you cool. say, I mean, when anywhere you go, your help, your staff generally are tattooed. You've kind of built a monster with Philly like that. And it helps the overall impression of tattoos. You feel that has to then invariably also happen when you go, like we just got back from Chicago this weekend, and that was a monster show as well. You spend crazy amounts of money around there too for advertising. It's got to help tattoos in areas like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I literally have billboards from the state of Indiana to the state of Wisconsin.
Like, okay.
Like, you know, like you pretty much can't drive into the state of Illinois against the lake and not see my billboards.
So it kind of brings me to wonder how, I mean, if you're at, you said 24 shows a year,
24 shows a year.
And you just added, you're thinking about adding more, but you just added San Diego. Are you planning on getting past the Mississippi border? I mean, line more often?
Well, I've been past there. I mean, my first one out there was Kansas City. I did Kansas City.
Okay, right.
Yeah. 8 or 9 years ago, but I was kind of on an island out there. I was just like, I don't even remember why. It was that fucking miniature museum. I was like, I want to go to this miniature museum. I'm going to do a show in Kansas City so I can go visit this miniature museum. Right. Sounds okay. Dumb as fuck.
No, that's, like, hey, that's where these ideas come from. I was thinking that there was long, deliberate processes of thought, but you pretty much just say you could easily have a dartboard and a map.
Yeah, but then sometimes Troy's like, hey, why don't I do a show in Memphis because I want to eat barbecue and it's my birthday, so I'm gonna have the Reverend Horton Heat play for my birthday. And maybe I'll just do one show ever in Memphis because I just want to go see Graceland Sun Studios, you know, eat some dry rub ribs and hey, why don't I hire Reverend Horton Heat to play my birthday? Great time.
Makes perfect sense.
Did that show once. But how, you know, and that brings me back to the travel. You know, you want to enjoy life. You want to see the world. And, you know, I create an avenue for tattooers to get out. You know, some of these guys, they live their entire lives with looking at that Instagram on their phone, not really actually interacting on a personal level with any of these people, you know, and they're just, you know, these big fish in small little ponds. And it's great that, you know, I have this thing that they can get out and learn and go to.
So you must have an understanding of interconnections. Just like you said, you can't really replace human interconnection, you know, connections for, and that is what your show is actually, isn't it? I mean, I don't know that I've seen it like that prior. And I think that's possibly what you must bring to it. Cause I was talking with another artist earlier today and we start talking about different things in the industry. I don't know that this show, it works the same without you. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, maybe, and not just that's, I imagine why other people aren't doing it overseas or it's not being replicated. Cause I do know some people who've tried to replicate it and failed. It just, I don't think everything was right there. So my curiosity was making me wonder what it was that, you know, might set you apart from others who have, I'm not going to mention names, I guess, but that have failed in the past to try and have large lifestyle tours. And
people must be your understanding. People aren't organized and nobody looked at it like I did as a business. Also, you know, there's people that weren't that have tried to do it that weren't tattooers. They didn't really understand how tattooers are or what tattooers need or what's going to work. And it's a very delicate balance. You know, I'm serving two masters. I'm serving a public that wants to have an experience, and I'm serving, you know, the tattooers for a slightly different experience of being able to get out there, do tattoos that they want to do. And, you know, and also, you know, slowly training the public into, what's a good tattoo and what's not, you know, like some of these cities I go into and I'm like, you know, like they're, you know, they don't have, you know, they have one or two really good tattooers that are booked up for like a year in advance. And, you know, the rest of the environment isn't what showcased on my floor for sure. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So it gives the public, the client base, an education in what is available so that they can really make a determination about what quality
is.
I
remember getting in an argument with a local tattooer, and I won't say his name or which city it was, but he was like, yeah, you know, you don't live here. You come into our town and, you know, like you're tattooing all the people. And I'm like, nope, I'm advertising. I'm bringing people. How many people have just gotten one tattoo from you in your entire life? And how many people get a tattoo and
get another
in a
one.
10-year span, they get, you know, they get another five more, six more, 10 right. more, you know, like I'm creating a clientele for you in your city. Like I'm creating interest in tattooing as a medium.
Whether you want to advertise them to them or not is your own
whether you
foolish
want to be,
business mistake.
You know, whether you want to be part of my thing, not part of my thing, you know, plenty of people are very happy to do that. And you know, I hope all the good tattooers from each of the cities that I do, you know, participate in my shows, because I want them to be showcased. I want, you know, one of the things important to me is having the local environment behind me, so that the public, you know, I'm drawing 10,000 people in, and you know, 6,000 of those people live within a driving distance of where your shop is.
Right.
You know,
and many times I've seen people come to a show, they won't have an intention of getting tattooed, but instead finding a local artist and having a better ability perhaps to judge people face to face, their work right in front of them, and then see if they have a connection with that person or not, or if they don't. And then they find a permanent artist.
Yep. And, you know, and people that have gotten one tattoo out of them by a show, and they've become a lifelong and then the next year I see like they had a tattoo of the day, and then the next year they're entering a sleeve in the category. And I judge right. every contest with your lovely wife. And I got to take a picture of the Candy Crush this weekend, which is always a good joke, but I've never posted.
My wife is part of the Candy Crush. The other part is Candace Reed.
Yep. So it's two candies judging with me. So I put their faces next to my face, and I always call it a Candy Crush. Because I got the candy on both sides of me, which is fun. Watching people over the years, cities, their clients, seeing the first time I went to Kansas City, like the small and medium categories were heavy with entries, and the large and XL categories, I want to say the first 2 years of Kansas City, we went home with third place for extra large both years, because people there didn't have like extra large tattoos to enter.
Right.
And now it's 8 years later, and these shops are doing full back pieces, they're entering full sleeves.
And you're seeing them. And, does that make you feel like a parent of some sort? You're doing so good, this little city.
I think in a city in an environment like Kansas City, where you have a real cool city, but you're kind of you have a real cool city in the middle of a goddamn cornfield somewhere, So there's not. They don't have the pollen to cross pollinate the way that Philly, Baltimore, New York, Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, Cleveland has this travel, and people can there's just goddamn nothing for like 6 hours in any direction of Oklahoma or of Kansas City. You know what I mean?
When you decided to do Kansas City, then did you think it would be a one-time deal so you could see this miniature museum? You wanted to see Fleas do a circus act or something, and then you thought you might not come back? Or
I just thought, I did Louisville, and then I'm like, I want to go a little further out. And at that point, there weren't tattoo conventions, and I'm like, I'll do one show that would be kind of centralized for, a 6 hour drive for people to go from multiple different areas. So I was kind of purposely choosing some of these places to, that would be, the one show in that whole region. You know what I mean? And then I ended up filling in all the cities. And now I run a show in Kansas City, Denver, Houston, Dallas, Oklahoma City, and New Orleans. And pretty much all of those cities, it's about a 3 hour clip from each of them to get to the next one. And I get artists that come and, I built an audience. Tattooers come. My wife actually tattooed the same girl who lived in Killeen, Texas. And she tattooed her in Houston, then tattooed her in Dallas. And I think she said she's getting an appointment in Oklahoma City with the same girl. Because, that girl's like, hey, I love her watercolor tattoos. There's, you know what I mean? And so now my wife tattooed the same client in three different cities, because that client can drive, 2-3 hours, gets a hotel room, enjoys a day trip to,
that. Some people like the getting tattooed in that environment. Some people might not, but some people, that's really their thing. I sometimes have a hard time understanding it.
Well, same thing with my wife tattoos a lot of her Philly clientele in Baltimore. And then they come out, like, if they have kids, they come and get tattooed in Wildwood. Because if you're a parent and you live in Philly and you don't bring your kids to Wildwood, you're just a neglectful drunk,
Is that the determination?
If you don't go to the shore to Wildwood, or you just lost out as a parent. You're gonna pay for it in fucking therapy later,
Wait a second, let me see if I understand this right. It's summertime, and you're going nowhere,
and you ain't going to Wildwood.
Go to the shore.
Failed. your daddy's a broke ass motherfucker. Mommy should go find something better, you know?
Right. Many marriages have broke up on less. Right on.
Yeah.
So these things kind of, myself too, I just booked, we just did Chicago. I was booking for Milwaukee, you know, because you can't do everybody, you know, that comes through. And that's,
or you can do a half sleeve and be like, hey, you know, I'll do the other, I'll do the inside in Milwaukee. I'll do the, you know, we'll add this on and, you know, or even Minneapolis. I mean, that's only like a 5-hour kick from, Milwaukee, you know, maybe seven to
not know, in Indiana though, right?
Chicago. Indianapolis, the health department won't license. There is a small Indianapolis show, and I actually hung out with the guy that runs it this weekend. I forget his name. I'm terrible with names, but super.
Was it the Sleepy Hollow nice show? Guy.
No, he's doing one called the Indy something, but anyway, it's in the Indianapolis, and I wanted to do a show there, but you can't go into the city, and there's a couple hotels that have like small, you know, ballrooms that you can do by the airport, but for me, it's too small of a show to be worth the production that I have. I actually bought a second semi truck today. It's a green
today.
One.
What color will be tomorrow?
Okay, so now I have I have box trucks, but now I have two full semi trucks with 53-foot trailers, so that I'm handling production of my shows. Like, you know, I got, you know, real life truckers that are working the shows and following our circus, you know. It's
and that's where you've seen it, like a business cool. Then I'm guessing, because I've seen that you've grown. You bought your first semi, I think, was it 1 or 2 years? 2 years ago, is that right? And before that, you were getting by with box trucks.
Yeah, I bought it right before COVID.
Perfect timing.
So it could sit in a field in Louisville, Kentucky for a year.
Talk more about that. How bad does that, because that is 100, so... COVID hits, everybody starts freaking out. One side's going crazy this way, one side's going crazy that way. You, however, have money, like serious money on the line. You've got bills that would start piling up without your ability to do shows. And you have obligations too, right? So you have deposits down on large venues that have to be in the tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, right? And do you forego those? Is this all act of God, and so it gets written off? You get to write it off on business insurance. What were your protections, and how did you navigate through all that?
No insurance bailed me out. They created this program to help a live entertainment industry called the SVOG grant, and I didn't get that either. They didn't want me. I think
too many tattoos.
I say because they just see that the word tattoo and they're like, oh, well, he's not a Broadway theater person. He doesn't need our money. So I refinanced my house to pay my 2019 taxes. And because I was fucked. And I went into it. The Chicago show got canceled 11 days before the show, when COVID lockdown hit. So,
but you've already got all this advertising. Yes. Fucked. Just wasted.
Yeah, it was all spent, wasted, you know, for a show that didn't happen. You know, so I just lost just a fucking crazy amount of money. And I had a lot of like prepaid advertising pushing forward. And, I just kept kicking the can down the lane, you know, like, hey, maybe June we can start traveling again. Yeah. Next year.
You're talking to your companies that you've got these prepaid advertisings with, they want to run the ad because they still want to make money too, of course. But you're pushing it.
I canceled everything. I froze everything. And but then it was like, you know, like tattooers were like, hey, we're not gonna be able to make this. It's COVID. So I had in July of 2020, by July we had over $500,000 worth of booth payments that people wanted refunded. And so I canceled all the advertising that I had pre-spent. and refunded everyone that wanted a refund and refunded them. And it was fucking a nightmare. So I'm paying staff to not do anything income producing. You know, they're fielding shitty emails from right. people like, give me my money back, give me my money back. And we're just right. like, we don't have any money, but
right.
I'll figure right. it out. Wow. I refinanced a bunch of my properties just to be able to pay my vendors back because, I'm not a scumbag. And, you pay me money, I will refund you. And that's it. Because I'm, and a lot of these, promoters that did that either.
Can I sing your praises on something too? Just it makes me think of it now. I don't know if I've ever said thank you for taking care of Robbie like you did, but man, thank you for that. I just listened to him on a podcast with Carlton yesterday, and it reminded me of how well you did help him when he fell, broke his leg at your show, and he didn't know how he was going to make it through the next couple of years. And yep. you're kind of, that you're a stand-up guy. That was really, to me, there's, moments of tests. It's not necessarily what people say ever. It's what they do. And that was certainly those moments.
I've always had a philosophy that I eat last. And everything I create, everyone wins. And if everyone can't win, I'm not in. Like, I'll cancel cities. I'll, if there's mm-hmm. not longevity in it, I'm out because everyone has to win,
And that philosophy keeps you successful. Then I'm seeing.
It does. It does. I mean, I could certainly make more money running, things at tighter budgets. I could not spend all the advertising I do. I could not, spend all of the money on, entertainment I do. I could, not spend money bringing people all of the stuff and an artist area that prints their stencils and downloads their stuff and prints all their stuff, right. all these things keeps I do at my smooth. expense, and all the way down to having a really well-trained office that chases people to make sure that they're licensed, that they don't going to show up at a show and not have a license and can't tattoo or you know what I mean? Like it's a lot of work. It's an immense amount of work that we do. And, the work that we do separates us from anybody else. And, Yeah.
And we see it. You see the way
That I'm the only one that runs good shows. I mean, Derb runs a great mm-hmm. show in Hell City. Tramp's, Detroit show is on fire this year. It's great. Mm-hmm. I also do decorating for other people's shows, like my buddy Tommy from Hartford, Tommy Supply, Natan from Boston, John from Asbury Park, and I do moonlight decorating where I do pipe and drape for their shows to help them out. And
moonlight decorating, cool. Is that what that's called?
Well, it's a very pretty name. Like who they pay to rent tables and chairs and pipe and drape and. Since I sounds own like all that equipment, I just moonlight as a decorator. Moonlight is, it's not my real job, but I just do it as a side hustle to help them,
Right. Right. And to, were you able to keep that going during COVID at all? Or that just stops there? Because who needs that?
There was no
right?
trade shows. I was one of the first people, every convention center I did in 2021, that was like the first public show for them. And they were just like, we'll see how this goes. Cincinnati, like the union got disbanded that does the labor work for setting up the pipe and drape and tables. So the union's like, hey, this guy owns a woodworking shop. He can probably get you some labor, like he hires us, for jobs. So I hire him. And in Cincinnati, he had his like, three daughters, two cousins, and two of their high school friends. Seriously, right. I had like nine cheerleaders set up the tables and chairs, and they didn't have to time any of the other the other labor I had all year. They killed it. They were like, "Yeah." I was like, "Oh my god!" There's like, I was like, well, "Jesus used Christ!" That one has to braces. Doing that. Is she like? Is she over 12? Like, Jesus
well, they're
Christ,
used to doing those floats and stuff, right? They got they're used to the staples with the plastic and stuff. They're making parades usually, right?
or meetings and spirit day. That's funny. That's funny.
Thing where, you know, everyone tried to do their best in a really weird time. And, you know, I mean, 10 years from now, we're still going to be talking about like what 2020 and 21 were, and, you know, and how crazy everything got. And, you know, it's I just tried to do my best. And I was like, all right, once we had vaccines, I was like, all right, here's my take on it. If you have the opportunity to get a vaccine, COVID in theory should be over for you. And I don't feel bad about, you know, running events that I'm putting people in harm's way. If people don't want to get a vaccine, that's fine too. I think they should. I mean, I was super happy I got a vaccine and a booster shot, because when I got COVID, I was only sick for 2 days. And I watched plenty of friends of mine in hospitals. I mean, fuck, James Wan almost died like twice. And, you know, it was rough, but, you know, we planned out in 2021 to just move forward, you know, for June last year, and said, you know, this is it. And then we just smashed like an entire year worth of shows out in like 6 months, you know, just to make up time and try to travel and get, you know,
and it seems that the cities are definitely, people are coming out and I'm guessing the same numbers, because it usually feels the same. Have you noticed a big drop or any raise? Is it some places that they're actually more relieved?
They're building. I mean, Chicago, I didn't finish reconciling it all out, because I've been doing the Cleveland booth map all day, like where vendor assignment. But but it looked like, Chicago was almost the same as pre-COVID numbers. Philly was just slightly off of pre-COVID numbers. And I expected Philly to be a little bit off, because they dropped the vax carding only a couple days before our show.
Right.
So people had already decided, you know, in the vax carding thing, I mean, I got a vaccine. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not some kind of conspiracy nut or anything like that. But at the same time, you know, people do you. Do you know what I mean? I'm not your fucking mother. I'm not going to make you do whatever. It's but doing the vax carding, definitely, if 30% of the population doesn't have a vax card, I just told 30% of the population not to come to my event. I run events for a living. So, you know, I mean, you know, I'm just sitting there hemorrhaging money until I can run an event again. And that was a shitty year and a half, you know?
Did it set you back? I know that you've got an end goal kind of eventually where you hope that you'll be able to retire, because you're one of those guys that thinks pretty far ahead, I think. But did it set you back from any of your goals like that?
Probably, but I've also been developing real estate for 15, 20, almost 20 years now. So it, you know, my end game was always kind of rooted in the real estate end anyway, which I did get set back because I did have to refi a lot of my real estate to pay, you know, my 2019 taxes, because I didn't run the events in the time that I would have otherwise paid them.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not like I saved the money to pay the taxes. Like, you know, it's one of those things where like, oh God, really? I owe that much? God damn it. You know, like, all right. Let me send them, I'll send them this much. And then, all right. After the Chicago show, I'll send them another little chunk. I can send them, you know, like, and that's kind of the way I've done it all my life. But, you know, like to get the biggest tax bill I ever got in my life while all of my businesses are shut down was like brutal. And then, you know, like no real assistance on my end. I mean, I got PPP loans. I got, you know, whatever bullshit, but that didn't really cover the damage. You know what I mean?
It didn't buy you a Ferrari.
Didn't buy me a Ferrari.
So you already had the Porsche then before the PPP loan too. Maybe we should point that out.
No, I actually bought the, well, I mean, financed the Porsche, but, after I was like halfway through the year last year of, running shows again, and I could finally like breathe a little bit. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to buy myself the first nice thing I have for like 2 years. And
I'm curious because you don't treat yourself very to, in my experience, you do seem to make sure. I've never thought about it in the philosophy that you said that you make sure you eat last, but that your philosophy is you should. But I see that now in several of your choices, except for, of course, in your hairstyle. You've kind of stamped my own alpha mullet.
Yeah. Well, that's because I cut my own hair and I can't see the back of it to cut it. So it just keeps growing longer on the back.
Okay. So that's the party in back and the mullet in front, right on. Yeah, it's just that makes kind of more sense.
Grown organically by cutting my own hair.
Right on. I thought there was more intended purpose to it. Like I'm going to be fashion forward. It's going to be the hot. Actually, it is that ironic to you? Because we are watching the mullet become.
It is definitely an on-purpose ironic mullet that I've been rocking for a while. And I've definitely always had fun with that. And
it's coming back, bro. Are you the person responsible?
Well, Neil's out mulleting me now. So I don't even have the sweetest mullet on the Villain Arts tour staff now. Neil's and he's got that creepy mustache. So definitely
I love it. Yeah, he and, beats you there. I had to, for certainly I porn my, stash.
I mean my beard was down to my belly button when COVID hit, and then I couldn't get a mask over that thing. It was like my mask was just pulling on my ears. It was like 5 inches off my face. I was like, fuck. So I had to shave the beard off for COVID, because I couldn't fit that thing in the under right. a mask,
Hey, tell me on as far as it goes with alpha mullets and a hierarchy, is that an assigned thing, like a group inside it? Does that make him the number one then, like
the alpha mullet? Yeah.
Yeah. Are there others in contention, and once somebody starts growing out their mullet too far, they have to get in some kind of like scissor fight?
Yeah, I don't know. We should definitely have a mullet gang on the tour.
Villain Arts. Where's Villain Arts come from? The name.
Honestly, it came from I had a clothing label in 98, and it was called Tattooed Kingpin, and I did bowling shirts, and they were super sweet bowling shirts. At that point, that swing dance music and rockabilly music got real popular for a minute. And
styles, dude, you belong in London.
Setting that. And also, my suit game is on point, I like dressing.
Yes.
I always have, So, I'm selling these like fancy bowling shirts that have tattoo prints on them, mm-hmm. And then that whole thing kind of faded out. And then I was like, maybe I'll redo it as a new clothing label with, mixing different graffiti stuff. And then I'm like, how about Villain? Villain is cool. Like Villain, it kind of has like this old school kind of word, but you're still like, you're an exotic, old fashioned criminal, and that just kind of clicked with me. And I was like, that's cool.
Superhero nemesis.
Villain Arts. You're kind of we're outsider artists, being tattooers. We're tattooing will never be part of the mainstream art culture. We'll always be classified as outsider art. Typically untrained. It's we're not following the same, whatever the modern art world
guidelines
is now, we'll always be kind of outsiders and
setting our own course.
I just kind of wanted to label us as villains within that, I still kind of pay a little tongue in cheek homage to, our outside, roots.
Does that cause friction at all? Booking gigs at all? You said there's some cities that are just like tattoo or okay.
And in Puerto Rico, they pronounce it Valayan. Right, what the word villain is.
Right on. What is Lex Luthor then? He's not a Valayan.
He's not a Valayan.
It sounds like a whole nother world. Like a planet that Jesse Smith would have in his NFT universe.
There's that whole nod to there's a whole nod to comic books too, which were, you know, I was a big fan of comic book art. You know, I collected comics for years and years. I actually did a couple issues of a comic book back. I should have really do that project again. They're kind of like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, illustrated comics of acid tripping stories from when I was a kid, and just being I don't know. There's probably a reason why I got three felonies by the time I was 18.
Right.
And there's a pretty good illustrated working on thing, but I haven't worked on it for a minute. But you know,
what influence did LSD psychedelics have on your art?
For me, I don't know that it was really. I don't know that it was really art. I think like being a 16-year-old kid full of full of punk rock anger, and you just wanted to kind of find yourself and do I want to say I was like 16 years old, and I went to see the Dead in Red Rocks in Denver, and drove home with 100 sheets of acid from Denver just on like day five of eating fucking acid, you know? And, right. You know, it's just a
cross state lines.
By the time I got back to Wisconsin, we were driving in the car that, I was driving, had a broken speedometer. So I'm like, okay, we're back in this town, you know, and it was fine. Like when I'm following cars, cause like, you know, I'm going the same speed as them. You know,
right?
And given I have 100 sheets of acid on me, right? So
yes.
I'm driving down the street, and this old man on a bike passes me and flips me off, and like shaking his fist at me, and I was like, "Oh, we should probably drive faster."
Were you high? You're wigging out, or not?
Yeah, I was like day five and fucking, you know, spun out on acid. I was a bad kid.
Dude, you're not supposed to go sideways. You're not supposed to go. Like one time, right? One trip a week at the most. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. We were just crazy kids, you know.
I guess like, you had 100 of them, huh? So why not? You get passed by a guy on a bike. Hey, which actually brings me to something. I was told that you were going to have a podcast yourself and considering doing stories of things just like this.
Yeah, and I'm not sure like how I want to do that, or how I want to like what I want to do with my podcast. I think it would be fun to just tell like really crazy, crazy fun stories of like, you know, tattoo travel and going to different cities and different life experiences. I think I'm going to go that way with it. I don't know how hard I'll get with it, you know, like.
You gotta tell the story is the truth, though, right? You're not one to obscure. You're gonna need a pseudonym. A whole different character.
How pissed is my wife gonna be when I, you know, if I tell a story of going to a massage parlor with Philadelphia Eddie in 1992? You know, like that's a great story. I don't know that I should really tell that one. Like,
no, but your wife's really understanding. I've met her. She's awesome.
No, I love her, but
you got an easy time with that one.
Also, like how
maybe not having your mom here.
At what point in a world of cancel culture is it bad for my brand to be too crazy? Do you know what I mean?
I 100%. So it's happening this weekend, brother.
I mean, I'll have to reel that in a little bit, you know. And not that I've ever done anything that I even really would consider that I'd be cancel cultured for. But
there's a different understanding nowadays, or a different
picture. It paints a picture of So I think I would just want to keep it positive. I want to tell some crazy stories, but not, you know what I mean? Kind of
try to avoid the names
a little bit less of an edge than I could. You know what I mean?
It's my favorite part of listening to the stories of the cogs of, I call them cogs. I shouldn't call people cogs, I guess, but the machinery that is Villain Arts, you know, the people that are, they have some crazy fucking times. Like the time we convinced those two lesbians that Frank owned a yacht, and he was about to get laid by one of them.
Right. Yeah, and they bought him a dessert. We still call Frank a Louisville 10. for that. They bought him a $100 debate tower for our table. It was crazy. We were like, oh my God, Frank is a goddamn Louisville 10.
How far a lie will get you. That is so awesome. And certainly well, you if know, you're going to play it. Mm-hmm.
But actually for real, Frank, Frank lived in San Francisco, he knew a lot of that, you know, that late 70s new people, that were in the whole, you know, music business and things back then.
Okay.
That, you know, having people that are in that same age group, hear some of those stories. It makes him a really interesting guy. I like Frank.
He does. Yes.
You know,
he's very educated on history.
Four. I don't know if I'm snitching him out for being older than me, but you know, it's I love the experiences that I had, and I love that I lived my life, you know. And if there's something that I can impress on people, and one of really my entire life passion with creating, the tattoo convention, tattoo festivals, this traveling thing, this whole pollen among the bee community of tattooing, is live your life, see the world, travel. You know, I can't even imagine like living in the same little town and not, you know, like I've like carpenters that work for me for my real estate company, and they've like never been to Wildwood, or that's the furthest they've been in their entire lives. I was telling one of them that I was going to fly him to Chicago to drive a truck back, and he's like, I've never been on a plane before. And I'm like, what? You're like 55. Like, what? What do you mean you've never been on a plane before?
Right.
Like me and Aaron is used to joke that, like we have more passport stamps than people have been to states that we know, you know, we've been to more countries than people have been to states. But you really, I created this environment. Come out, do some shows, do some tattoos, meet people.
But certainly, but don't also, you think like, that really, traveling's that oh, it's kind of the it traveling is kind of the food for the artist, right? For your artistic soul.
It really charges your batteries. Like, you know, people go, people come to the shows, they walk around, they see all these, you know, all these really cool tattoos. They see, you know, they get to meet, these artists that are doing, you know, this work that they see on Instagram, that they see on, and they're like, wow, I really, you know, and they're like, oh, okay, he's using Industry Ink now. Maybe I'll check that thing out. Maybe I'll check out, you know what I mean? Oh, he's using he's using that new Cheyenne with the battery pack on top, you know? maybe I'll check that thing out, you know? Like, and it's, like I said, pollination.
It's kind of what you're best at.
I can't even imagine like wasting your life and just not doing the same thing every day would just be, you know? And that's kind of like when you said earlier, like what's my end game? I got money, but I like to travel. I like to see people. I like to, you know,
so your end game would still be traveling. Awesome.
You know, am I going to,
could you handle it?
Still standing outside of a frozen loading dock, you know, like,
yes,
like
because you put a wood yourself table stack
onto a truck. Nah, probably not.
But, I've seen you push yourself through a weekend.
I'm doing it. Hey, you helped me hang up drape in Minneapolis when none of my fucking labor staff showed up. And we were stuck there till 4 in the morning. And
and these are the things that,
with that, you know.
But you also, like, you manage stress. You open the show. You're the earliest one there generally that I know. Sometimes Carl will beat you down. But then you're also one of the latest to leave.
And I close it.
Yep. And then you're at the party. And you do an after party so that you can be a part of that. Sometimes I think about how I shouldn't bitch and it's the only thing that I'm good at. I'm complaining this week about how my body is feeling from doing two shows back to back. And I have no room for complaint when I think of what you put yourself through.
Oh, dude, we did like 8 of them back to back in July to the end of or till October. We did
what like kind of July mentality pushes that
back to back.
What's that
well,
drive?
I mean,
in
a
there?
Lot of us were kind of like, you know what, we had a year and a half off, so let's
okay.
Let's get to work, you know?
Yeah.
And also like, I mean, I definitely had a lot of pent up, like, you know, like frustration of not, I mean, my wife loved it. She was like, you know, we're cooking dinner for ourselves every night. We were like going to the beach every day, you know,
right.
Florida COVID was great, you know?
well, you guys didn't have COVID.
No, it was like there for about 6 weeks, you know? And then, they just released everything, you know, and it was cool. You know, I was just really ready to travel, ready to see the world and ready to have new experiences again. You know, like I just need, I don't know. I just can't do the same thing twice. It's, you know, I'll rarely watch the same movie twice unless it's like a decade later or something, you know?
Right.
I love the travel. I love to take a day and, hit a museum, you know, and, I mean, I can tell you what the best museums are. For a while, we were watching Anthony Bourdain's show on whatever city we were doing to go get whatever ridiculous food he got, you know. So we'd have, you know, I picked that up off Chris Collins, who used to work for him.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea.
That was like his shtick. He was always like, oh, yeah, here's the Anthony Bourdain list. You want to come meet us for this hot dog place? And I was like, yeah, I like hot dogs.
Right,
that sounds
slick.
Cool, you know? Then we get there and everyone's just screaming and the whole thing is like it's a hot dog place. It's like a Jerry Springer episode. And I was like, I don't know.
Really?
I don't like getting yelled at. What the fuck is wrong with this place? But it was an experience. But
welcome,
you know,
to
Weenie
World. Like, what the fuck you want?
Yeah, yeah. What the fuck you want on that? You know? And you're like, whoa, why are you yelling at me?
Back to Baltimore. Well, you're used to it. You're living in Philly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the Philly hello. Philly. Now, another thing that you've done throughout, obviously you're an artist, but you've created and you still create, despite your traveling schedule, your work schedule, you create art very often and sometimes on such large scale that the most average painting you were doing for a few years was 48 square feet each one, right?
Yeah,
a
yeah,
sheet,
like
sheet of plywood.
4 foot by 8 foot, 4 foot 8 by 8 foot panels, and most of them were 2 to 3 panel paintings each, you know, that I'd paint live at the shows.
Where are those at now?
And
in storage? Or?
A lot of them are in Philly. I'm opening an Oddities bar, so a bunch of them are going to get installed into that bar. I'm opening an Oddities bar in Philly.
Really?
Probably in about a year.
Liquor license and all that?
I bought a liquor license, so that's a fucking goddamn high ticket item in Philadelphia.
I would imagine. And then I imagine staffing might be a motherfucker too. Just to, you know,
well
just because I probably watched too much Tafferty.
I bought a parking lot to use for my building, but then they told me that they didn't want to use it for parking and that they wanted to develop it for retail. So then they wouldn't let me use it for parking, even though I had intended. So then I was like, okay, I'll just build a new building here, a new construction building. And then I finally got it all together, got the building, building permits in, everything ready to go, and then COVID hit. So now, and then all the prices were coming back because nobody wanted to work, and building supplies doubled, that I couldn't even build the building to turn a profit. So now I finally, in the last month, got a contractor that's giving me, because it's too big of a project for me to handle on my own, even though I have like a real estate crew or a team, but you know, it's too big of a project for the manpower I got.
Right.
So I'm starting that project and I'm going to open my own little bar in it, which I have like a pretty extensive Oddities collection.
I've seen a few
that
of
I'm
going to
put in there with, you know, with, like, with a lot of my paintings and
two-headed pigs, shrunken heads, all kinds of memorabilia from the past, surgeries and stuff. Right.
Yep. Tibetan skulls, elongated skulls, you know, just a lot of medical anomaly taxidermy, two-headed calves, two-headed calf skeletons. I even have a centaur. It's a zebra with a human torso attached to it, you know. Just a lot of weird stuff. So it's going to be a fun
How
bar.
Do you get like even that, you need licenses and stuff just to travel with that kind of shit, right? Like that's a human torso?
Nah. I got a centaur guy.
A centaur guy. No, completely normal. Just to have a dude.
Centaurs.
Right on. They don't mind. They donated their body to art.
Yeah.
Ever thought about making any of those artwork thing projects that you've had into NFTs? I was just talking with Jesse Smith about it.
You know, a million people have hit me up about that, and I think I'm going to get into that soon, but I don't know. That whole I see that whole arena going I don't know. I don't see it being, I mean, it's kind of a pyramid scheme, the whole NFT thing. I don't see the longevity in it, but then again, I did miss kind of the boat on the crypto thing too, for that same reason where I was like,
okay,
you know, like there's a reason why the US dollar has, you know, roads and infrastructure that backs it. There's nothing that backs Bitcoin. It's just a number anomaly, and you're just going to put a value on it of whatever you say it is. How is that right. money?
It's funny you say. I was just talking with Jesse Smith today about his NFTs, and I eventually come to a point. I'm like, is it a pyramid scheme? Which, of course,
it basically is. But
of course, it kind of is.
You know, and I get it. You know, and it, I mean, it's not. You know, it does have like a tangible item attached to a blockchain, you know, so it's, I mean, it's not particularly different from crypto.
Slightly better than Bitcoin for that. I started also, to see the value as he described his world he's creating and everything, but you have also, such an extensive history. It seems like you turning yours into NFTs might be almost a no brainer.
Yeah. I mean, I've published 20 some books. I mean, I owned a publishing company at one point. I mean, I definitely have a lot of artwork. I mean, I probably have like 50 gigs worth of hand drawn artwork that I've done over the last 30 years of my career. I'm hitting 30 years in October, 30 years tattooing. And I've always been a very prolific painter and created additional artwork outside of just tattooing, you know.
For so many years you were always doing the t-shirts too. Weren't you generally doing the t-shirts for the Villain Arts?
I still
too?
Do all the t-shirts for Villain Arts every okay. My wife did a couple of them, but for the most part I've done almost every design for, you know, 20 years of every show, which is like 50 shirts that I have to, you know, make, digitally paint, vector, and set up in print spreads to silkscreen print in-house. I still print all our own show merch in-house.
That's got, I mean, you kind of, if that's been some part of your whole direction with the is always taking on new parts. So like, right, like pipe and drape is something that you would have to have at every show. Well, eventually you buy your own pipe and drape. Now you have
going to places, you know,
and the same with making, you want to have shirts for your event. Well, you might as well have a company that's making shirts.
Yep.
Same with books then.
Yeah.
And same obviously with houses, I guess.
I miss the publishing thing, you know, when tattoos,
I thought you were still doing it
for photo reference, but I mean, now everything, yeah. You know, tattooers just use Google. So, you know, selling books is like a thing of the past, but I still like books, you know, something
you usually bring some out. How are the sales then? They're not that great for sales at the shows for books right now. Have they dramatically dropped?
I still sell books because I've always just liked books. And even though I quit publishing books, you know, I mean, for a while, I've probably published, you know, 75, 80 different titles of collections of people's tattoo or, you know, like artwork over the years.
Right.
You know, I mean, 20 some of my own artwork, you know, collections of different stuff. I remember seeing like this Pinterest thing and they're making fun of these star things and, you know, Pinterest. And I'm like, oh my God, I totally, that's from my star book from like like in 2002. I drew that, you know.
You went viral years later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, it's been lifted on Pinterest and sold, you know.
Whatever. Well, that's what I'm saying, and, man. You're setting fashions every NFT, time you go.
But the NFT thing is kind of interesting in a way that you can create a copyright for your art in a way of you know, maintaining ownership of imagery.
That was one of the key points they went over. I do
like that, and I do but then again, nobody really, because the internet was always free, nobody really wants to pay for that. So then if you put an NFT on it, is that, you know, are you going to be able to post that? How Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, they, you know, this thing called Shazam, anytime you use music that's not your own, it's okay. Shut down. Right. So will the NFT thing just kind of rule out visual art along with music as well from the internet into a way to monetize artists?
Somewhat, because you no longer have to go through the Library of Congress for the copyright. And it's also verified across several platforms now, including Twitter. So he's using it, like if you bought one of his NFTs for one of his characters or one of his, type of fish was it? Car Chaos is where it's from. But anyways, he's got a fish in there. And if you buy one of those, you get into his tattoo convention for free. And so I guess the people are able to, through Twitter, verify that they own that NFT.
Yeah, and so, I was thinking about kind of doing trying a free NFT with every ticket sale as like a thing, and then it gets spread or resold faster, which, you know, in the let's say that Liberty Bell girl that was the logo for the Philly show this year. It was a contortionist girl who's heavily tattooed, doing a striking pose in front of a Liberty Bell. Right. You know, if I'm in all of that artwork that I do for the t-shirts is already, it's already vectored in digital. So it's easy for me to make NFTs of that, you know, like would I, you know, including that into the thing, you know, like I'm thinking about doing that with an upcoming show and just including it as like a bonus, like, right. You know, hey, you
like we have these
if it resells or if people resell the thing, then on that pyramid scheme I get 10% off the bottom of whatever that is. Like I'm curious to see what a real market of that is. Do you know what I mean?
Right. And that would be one way to feel it out. Huh?
But yeah.
Jesse's into getting people into it. So if you're curious, for sure, look him up. I just knew of all your extensive work. So and he talked highly of you. He thought it was pretty respectful the way things kind of went with you in a couple other tattoo conventions. And just
I like him.
So he thinks highly of you. Yeah, you're a good kid. All around. You know, I really appreciate you talking with me, brother. I feel like I may have stayed too long and said too much, or at least it's giving me my call sign. That's not the truth, but I have to pee like a racehorse and I'm going to let you go. Do you have anything that we should
pee while we were doing this?
I'm trying to be professional. You can do what you want. The whole time. Right now. Right on. Yeah, no, Candy doesn't let me back in the living room. It echoes or something. She's doing the recording. You know, I'm not good at many or much.
But thanks for talking with us. Look forward to seeing you again at the next show. And hopefully maybe we'll have you on here when you're ready to drop your podcast, and I'll be able to help you promote it.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. That'll be great. That'll be right fun. On. I think, I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be a good project. And I guess I'll see you on Thursday next week in Cleveland.
Yes. Yes. But upcoming all events, right. Will look at the Villain Arts webpage. Follow us on there. What's your Instagram? Do you post?
It's just my name, TR. Well, I mean, Villain Arts. I post on my my personal Instagram too, but mostly it's just pictures of me with other people or paintings that I've done.
Right. But that's so interesting too.
Yeah.
Follow the kid.
Just, you know, Troy, TROY, Temple, Temple, TIMPEL.
Right on.
All right, cool.
Thank you, brother. We'll talk to you again soon. No problem.
All right, later.
Later.